Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Meet the Author. My name is Denny Griffin and I'll be your host for the next half hour. And my guests today are Mary and Jack Branson. And we're going to be discussing their new book, Murder in Mayberry. Mary holds a BA degree from the Indiana State University and has done graduate work at Georgia State University. She's the author of 16 books in the children's and Christian market and has ghostwritten many more. Jack is a retired U.S. Treasury special agent who served on a public corruption task force. His Secret Service duties included the presidential jump team and NATO's 50th anniversary. He's a licensed private investigator heading his own agency, Branson & Associates, LLC. Good morning, Mary and Jack, and welcome to Meet the Author.
Thank you. Good morning to you.
And we're going to start talking about your book in just a few seconds here, but we're trying something new today, and that is we're going to be giving away an autographed copy of Mary and Jack's book, Murder in Mayberry. And what we're going to do with that is anyone who calls in at 646-478-0982, 646-478-0982, you can certainly have a question or comment for Jack or Mary. And also, we'll take your email address if you're interested. And at the end of the program, we'll announce who the winner is. And you'll be contacted by email to give your snail mail mailing address. And Mary and Jack will get a book out in the mail to you. So again, the number is 646-478-0982. Okay. While we're waiting for some calls, could you be so kind, whoever wants to go first, and tell us a little bit about the book and how you happened to write it?
This book is about the death of my aunt. She was 85 years old. Her name was Anna Mae Branson in Madisonville, Kentucky. And that's a small town, about 20,000 in western Kentucky. It's a town where most people know other folks. They leave their doors unlocked even in this day and time, and they just don't have very much violent crime there. And on January 12, 2003, about an hour after she got home from church on Sunday night, my aunt was brutally murdered in the basement of her home. She was hit with a blunt object in the back of the head many times and stabbed over 90 times after she was already deceased. And it was no forced entry. My aunt was quite wealthy. She had owned the Dairy Queen. She and my late uncle had owned the Dairy Queen in Madisonville for 35 years. And it was a teenage hangout, and everybody knew my aunt and uncle and loved them. They had no children of their own, and I was their surrogate child, I guess. Anna Mae was my mother's sister, and my Uncle Carol was my dad's brother. Sisters married brothers. So they were just like a second set of parents to me. But bottom line, my aunt had let someone in her home that she obviously knew. There was no forced entry, and she was very security conscious. And this crime, of course, devastated our family, losing a loved one like this. But being in law enforcement, I was a federal agent at the time. We had a very keen desire to see the person that did this brought to justice.
Now, I'm only a few chapters into the book, so I don't want to ask you any questions that would spoil it for me or for any other readers. But now, you obviously knew a lot of the facts. You know, you knew your aunt and so forth. But did this book require independent research? Were there things you didn't know that you had to do research on?
We found out, even with Jack's job that he had, we found a lot out about extradition that we did not know. It was really a shock to us that there's more than 20 countries that will not extradite if there's a chance of capital punishment. And again, not to spoil the book, but about halfway through, you find out who the killer was. That's not it's not completely a whodunit, but there's a lot of other suspense in the book. But the killer does leave the country and go to one of these countries that does not extradite. And that's something that I don't believe most Americans know. You know, they're going to these countries and giving their money. And, in fact, when someone spotted this person in the country and they went to the embassy, they said, do you know how many criminals we have here? You know, there were so many that have escaped punishment in the United States that they didn't even want to pick them up. So we did a lot of research like that. We also did some research into addiction, and Jack already knew a lot about that. But we did not understand how strong addiction can be, and addiction is involved in this as well.
You know, this extradition issue, now, I mean, that's come up periodically. I think one of the more recent cases was this Marine that allegedly killed his girlfriend who was pregnant and fled to Mexico, and supposedly if there's a death penalty involved, that's a non-extradition situation. I believe France too. So I know, and it is. I think a lot of people aren't aware of that. You're quite correct. Can you hold on just a sec? We got a call here, and let me answer it. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. I had a question for the authors, if I could.
Go right ahead.
You have Jack and Mary Branson on.
Yes. Yes, we're here.
Yes.
Hi, my name is Alex, and I just read your book. I was very intrigued by it. I couldn't put it down. I actually read it in two nights.
Wow, thank you.
Yes.
And I would love to know, do you have a website?
Yes, we do. It's murderthewrote.com. Easy to remember.
Great. And would that let me know any upcoming books you may have, too?
Yes, yes, we do. And we actually are working on another book, and it's a book on the Atlanta child murders, and we're writing it with the FBI agent who is in charge of the investigation. So we're very excited about that. This is a case that has been told in pieces, but never the entire story.
I remember that case very well. I was younger when that happened, but I do remember. And can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
I have a book that I would love to have autographed. Is there any way that I can get that done?
Absolutely. We do not sell books because we don't want to compete with the very kind stores that sell our books. But if you go to our website on the Contact Us tab, you'll find two ways that you can get an autographed copy. And one of them is to send us the book and with the return postage, and we'll be glad to autograph it and send it back. The simpler way is just email us with your address, and we have some book plates, and we can autograph the book plate and send you that, and there'll be no charge for that. So we're very glad to do that.
Thank you so much. It was an honor to speak to you.
Alex?
Yes.
Alex? Yeah,
yes.
Are you interested in the drawing for an autographed copy?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, let me have your email address if you're willing, and we'll draw a winning email at the end of the show. And if you're the lucky winner, Mary or Jack will contact you by email and get your mailing address.
Okay, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay, your email, please.
KYWAV as in Victor E at hotmail.com.
KYWAVE at hotmail.com.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay, very good, and thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, that was a good call for a couple of reasons. First of all, she asked you for information that I was going to ask you for later on in the program. So we've got your website out there, and also the fact that autographed copies of your books can be obtained and how to do that. So that's great. Now, we were talking about extradition, and the number of countries surprisingly high that don't extradite if there's a death penalty situation here in this country. Were you frustrated with what you found in that area?
Very frustrated. Of course, you know, you go back to the old Westerns, and the bad guys would always cross the border into Mexico, and they didn't have to worry about being arrested. And unfortunately, it's still that way today, which is surprising to a lot of people. And as you mentioned, there's a lot of countries that will not extradite. Ireland is a country that won't extradite, and that really surprised me. But the person that killed my aunt had done their homework, and they chose a country that does not extradite, Costa Rica. They will not extradite for capital crimes or even crimes where the subject might face life without parole. And I can understand on the capital crime issue, that is a, you know, even here in the United States, it's a iffy issue. I mean, there's definitely those that oppose it and those that are for it. But even taking capital punishment off the table, for a country not to extradite for a murder or a crime of that magnitude for life without parole is just unconscionable to me. And that just really is disheartening, and it was frustrating.
You know, I can't help but thinking, I was watching a program a couple of nights ago on one of the cable channels, and it was a program called Mobsters, and the subject was the so-called Murder Incorporated or Murder Inc., operated by New York gangster Louis Lepke Buchalter. And I knew that several of the killers involved with that operation ended up going to the electric chair at Sing Sing. I was surprised, though, when they announced it, how quick the executions were carried out. I mean, these guys were dead within 9 months of sentencing. And then today, you know, it seems like the guilty parties who are guilty and sentenced to death outlive the relatives of their victims.
That's really true. I wish we could go back to the old way.
Yeah, what? And I don't mean to turn this into a death penalty discussion, but what? Based on your knowledge, what is the difference? The appeals process, is that the big thing that drags everything out? Maybe different from what it was?
Right. You have automatic appeals for a death penalty case that kick in. Nothing even has to be done. Of course, the regular appeals process, even for a non-capital case, is so lengthy that you know, it takes years and years to get all those out of the way. But I like the appeal process, especially being in law enforcement. Everyone needs to be sure that their trial was conducted fairly, but it sure needs to be speeded up. The taxpayer is paying for the housing of all these death penalty inmates for decades.
And we absorb most of the court costs, don't we? A lot of these guys don't have any money.
Right.
So somebody's got to shell that out. You know, in fact, I was thinking about that, and one of the arguments against the death penalty, the anti-death penalty folks, is that it costs more to execute than it does for a life sentence. It seems to me that a prisoner, whether they are waiting to be executed or are doing a life or a lengthy sentence, are going to eat the same food. In other words, I don't think there's a special diet necessarily for somebody if they're awaiting execution versus if they're a lifer. So the cost and the cost of personnel, there are so many guards and get paid so much money and benefits and so on. It seems to me that a lot of this cost that they associate with the death penalty is the appeals process. Does that make any sense?
I think that's true, yes.
Okay. So if you didn't if you didn't drag it out for 15 to 20 years of all these appeals, it might economically reduce the cost of maintaining these people. Okay, anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. But back to the book. So was writing the book, because it did involve a family member, was it a painful experience? I mean, did it bring back memories, and was it uncomfortable at times?
It was painful, but it was also cathartic. We started journaling the day of the murder just for our own therapy, you know, because being a writer, that's just something that I needed to do. But there were times when we had to separate ourselves from the book. There were months when we didn't work on it, when it was just too painful. And there were times when we had to separate this lady that we loved so much, and it was such a part of our family, from what we were writing about. When we wrote about autopsy reports and 97 stab wounds and blood spatters, we could not think about this being this lovely lady that we knew. So there was a lot of pain. One thing we found, though, is that our pain has been helping some other folks. The book is endorsed by family and friends of violent crime victims because it is a very victim-sensitive book. We've had several people to write to us and say, you know, I cried all the way through this book. And after we read a little bit further, we'd realize that they had had some sort of grief in their life recently, and it was just going through that grief process with us. So we would recommend the book not only for someone who has experienced violent crime, but anyone who has experienced deep grief, you know, the loss of a spouse or a child. It's the same process. It's just a very deep emotional journey that you go through when you grieve. And I believe we were able to capture that because we're not going back and remembering. We wrote it as it happened.
So you've touched actually on several things with this book, in addition to the whodunit aspect of it, the mystery, if you will, or solving the murder, as you just mentioned. And that's a great thing. Now, your other books, Mary, you've written several other books. Have you written any others? I believe they were mostly children's. And was this your first murder?
Oh, yes.
Sorry?
We never dreamed we would write. But once we did, we realized how much Jack and I enjoyed writing together and how much our combination of left brain, right brain, you know, he's totally analytical and I'm totally creative, and what a good combination that is for true crime. So we really are interested in writing some more true crime, but this is the first thing at all like this that I'd written.
So your particular skills are melded very well then, huh?
Oh, we're just amazed at how much we just enjoy, always have enjoyed working together. And we have an office together, and we're just, you know, right together on our research and our writing. And it's turned out to be something, I wouldn't say enjoyable, because like working on the Atlanta child murders, there's been a lot of grief as we've researched that, and we've talked to the agents who found those bodies. And it's not been a pleasant process, but it's a story that needs to be told. And we believe that the murder in Mayberry is a story that needs to be told. There's a lot of messages in there. There's a message about addiction. There's a message about extradition. There's a message about family dynamics that is extremely strong. You find out how someone went from, there's a picture in a book of this murderer as a child, and you see how he came from being that trusting little child into a murderer. And you also see how the victim became a victim. It's all very strong family dynamics. So there's all those issues in there like that.
Do you think that going on with your other books, well, first let me back up to this book. How did you split the writing duties? Did you work together on each chapter? Did you, one of you, take certain aspects of the book and that was your job and the other took other things, or did you work together all the way through on everything?
We worked together all the way through on everything, but Murder in Mayberry is a little unique because when we got to the point of putting it down on paper in its final form, I asked Jack if I could write it in first person because I think it needed to be first person, and there are some things I wanted to say about him that he would not be able to say about himself. He has been very open, and we've been open about ourselves in the book. We've shown sometimes when we got frustrated, angry, irrationally angry, you know, all those things are in there. But a lot of capturing this killer, I credit to Jack and a couple of other real-life heroes that we found. And I wanted to be able to say those things. So I did the first person writing that polished the book. But from the beginning, we were in it together. And we've done the same with the Atlanta Child Murders book. We sit down, we read aloud to each other. We go back and forth. We research together. Each one of us does some of the interviews. You know, we're interviewing over 60 people for the Atlanta Child Murders book. So it's kind of like a, you know, right there, elbow to elbow.
And how long have you been working on the Atlanta child murder book?
We began in December. The FBI agent who was in charge of the investigation came up from Florida and spent a week with us, and that's when we began that. We're estimating it's still going to take us about 8 months to a year to complete it.
Mm-hmm. And what have you found in the way of cooperation? You said you needed to interview about 60 people. Has the cooperation been pretty good for the most part?
Oh, it's been great. This is one of those cases, and, you know, I believe you were in law enforcement. You understand that sometimes there's a little strain between the different branches of law enforcement, but we haven't mm-hmm. found that at all. We found that when these men got together, and a couple of ladies, when they got together, they had such a drive to find this killer that they worked together so well. And we're interviewing at Atlanta Police Department, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, and the FBI. And when we talk to any of them, they cannot say enough good things about the other law enforcement branches. They were just a team during this. And that was one of the reasons I believe the case was solved. But it was solved in the very last hour, of the very last day of their surveillance. I mean, there's just a lot of really interesting things in this book. But it was a combination of a lot of great brilliance of all levels of law enforcement, and it was a combination of just a lot of chance things that happened that brought them to Wayne Williams.
You know, and maybe you and Jack will agree or maybe not, but I found that certainly good police work, good investigative skills are obviously very, very important to solving crime. But there is a certain amount, I think, of luck involved. Like you say, chance events that happen and that you really can't account for, but just seem to be the break. That break comes, you know, maybe hard work had something to do with it, but there are certain things that happen that just seem to happen. Did you ever find that situation?
Well, it certainly is true. I mean, the skill, I think, comes in an investigation, knowing what steps to take at what time, you know, who to talk to. And, of course, when you're checking out your leads on any investigation, you never know what the person you're getting ready to interview will tell you. And I think that's a lot where luck comes in. If you have a person that they don't like the police in any way, shape, or form, if you can befriend them or get them to talk to you, that's where a lot of communication skills and luck play a factor. There are people that you can even almost trick information out of, and they don't even realize what they've told you. But it is law enforcement is a very interesting field. I mean, obviously, I'm prejudiced being in it for 30 years, but your statement is correct. There is a lot of luck involved along with the skill.
Now, you run a private detective agency now, private investigations. How did you adapt to the non-police investigations where you didn't have the same authorities and so forth that you would when you were conducting things as, you know, behind the badge?
Well, it really wasn't much of an adjustment. I still go in one day a week and work for the local police department. I enjoy making traffic stops and that type of thing. But as far as the private investigative business, I do mostly locating witnesses or people that looking for old relatives, friends, helping attorneys find witnesses, background investigations, and that sort of thing. So I really use a lot of the same tools that I used when I was a federal agent in doing that. One of my most satisfactory experiences as a private investigator, I like military history, and I had read a World War II book about an American airman that had been shot down over Germany and was a POW in the Stalag 17 that they made the movie about. Mm-hmm. And he was looking for an old service buddy. He was his bunkmate in the Stalag, and they had a falling out right before General Patton liberated the camp. And he had never been able to find this old friend of his, and I was able to find his friend and put them back together. And I enjoy doing things like that.
Oh, wow, that must have been quite a feeling, huh, to connect these two old pals.
It was great. I really loved it. Really loved doing that.
Listen, the time's going by very quickly here. What I'd like to do, if we could, is get into a little bit now, not specifically about your book, but about writing. And what process did you go through to get a publisher? Did you go the query route? Did you have something set up even before or in conjunction with writing the book? Or how did the publishing aspect come out?
Well, one thing I would suggest to anyone who's interested is to get a good agent. And, you know, we do have a good agent, and all that is handled by her. But if you don't have a good proposal, it just doesn't, it doesn't matter how good your book is if no one's going to read it. So we spent a lot of time making sure that our proposal for the book was as strong as we could make it. And we had a killer cover letter, and we had everything ready to go. And then we sent it to some agents. And from that point, you know, she moved forward. She actually sold the book in a week, and she said it was the fastest that she'd ever sold a book.
Oh, man.
So we were pleased.
Oh, I bet you were. And that you touched a second ago on my next point, and I'll give you my opinion and see what you think. I made the mistake when I started writing. I had a story I wanted to tell, and that was my only concern at that point. I wasn't thinking about writing more than one book at the time. And I didn't research the business of writing. And I think I made a bad mistake because I was caught unawares. I just had certain expectations that weren't realistic. And if I had it to do over again, I'd have saved myself a lot of grief by either prior to starting my manuscript or in conjunction with writing it, I would have researched the business to find out the what's involved with getting an agent, what's involved with getting a publisher, the publishing options, including now there's a lot of self-publishing options out there. And I didn't do any of that. And another thing I didn't understand was marketing. And Mary, you just said a few seconds ago that no matter how good your book is, if nobody reads it, it's not really worth much. So marketing, I think, is every bit as important as having a quality manuscript and a quality story. What are your opinions on that?
I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, we even if you have a good publisher today in the market, authors are expected to do a lot of promotion themselves. And publisher may arrange for radio interviews, but, you know, you have to be ready to do those things. You have to be ready to just look for ways to promote your book. Because there are, I read recently that, like last year, 1.2 million books were published and 950,000 of them sold under 99 copies. Now, everyone thinks that if you just get that book published, you're going to be rich. And we've had a lot of people come to us for advice, and they'll say, oh, you know, I want to write a book. I had a funny experience when I had my appendix out, and I thought I'd just retire on this money. And it just doesn't happen that way. You know, there are very few. If you're writing for fame, you know, seeing your name in print only lasts for about 30 seconds, and it's over. If you're writing to get rich, it's probably not going to happen. But those of us who write because we have to write, and you probably understand that, there's a book inside you, and it's going to come out, and that's the way. And then if you get fame, you get fortune, that's great, but you sure can't depend on it.
Don't quit your day job, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Listen, we're down to just a little over a minute. I just was wondering, now we haven't had any other callers. How do you want to handle this? Do you want to go ahead and declare Alex the winner, or do you want me to wait a few days and see if anybody plays back the podcast and wants to do something, or what?
Either way that you want. You know, Alex seemed like she really liked our book, so we really like her. But if you want to, you know, give it a few days and see if anyone posts any questions, that's fine too. We have a copy ready to autograph. Just
What if we do this? I made the statement we do this before the end of the show, and I like to keep my word whenever possible. So I would vote that Alex is the winner.
All right. That sounds like
And then
good.
What I'll do, if I get any messages or anything on my site, I can email you and let you know, and if you want to donate a second book to somebody, we can discuss that.
Well, we would be very open to doing that if you get a lot of comments. That would be great, too.
Okay. Let me make sure to repeat Alex's email address, and you guys can get a hold of her and get her mailing address. It's kywave@hotmail.com.
Okay.
kywave@hotmail.com.
We've got it. Great.
Okay. Listen, is there any chance you guys might be willing to come back on when your Atlanta book is finished?
Sure. Be happy to.
Okay, and I'll be in touch with you folks if, you know, we get any comments or anybody is interested in an autographed book. And I want to thank you so much for being on with me today. It's been a very, very entertaining and enjoyable half hour.
It's our pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and thanks again to Mary and Jack Branson for being on the show today. And I'll be on a special on the 26th of June at 8 p.m. Eastern for our third Crime Rant live show. That's the 26th, 8 p.m. Eastern for Crime Rant Live. See you then. Bye-bye.